Welcome back, friends, to the Shuttle Pod. I believe this is episode 39. We've made it to 39 episodes. This is extraordinary. Today is July 17th, 2017. I am one of the co-hosts here, Jared Whitley, and I'm joined by my good friends, Kayla Iacovino.
Hey, guys.
And, of course, the inimitable Brian Drew.
Hello, everybody.
So, we have an exciting episode for you today. It's one we wanted to get to for a while about... What are the top 10 canonical episodes of TNG? However, before we do that, we want to cover a little bit of Discovery news. And I'm just delighted to be able to say we have news to talk about rather than just talking about a 30-year-old TV show. I am very excited about that. So, Kayla, you are our subject matter expert on this. So could you tell us what's going on? Something in San Diego, perhaps?
That's true. Well, yes, this week, in fact, probably the day that this podcast hits the interwebs, I will be on my way to San Diego Comic-Con. May have heard of it, biggest convention certainly in the world. It's going to be running all weekend, and there's a ton of Discovery stuff happening at Comic-Con this year. There is a Discovery panel that's going to have all the main actors and some of the behind-the-scenes people on stage talking to fans, talking about the show. They're almost certainly going to have a trailer or some kind of footage to show us. They're revealing some exclusive items that they'll be selling at Comic-Con that are Comic-Con exclusives that are related to Discovery. They're even having a what they're calling a immersive Star Trek Discovery experience, which is an exhibit that has a photo showcase. The USS Discovery captain's chair will be there, which will be amazing to see. And they'll even let people sit in it and take photos. They have costumes and props and all kinds of stuff from the show. They are having little pedicabs that are themed in Star Trek Discovery that are going to be driving people around near the convention. So there's a ton of stuff happening, and CBS are really actually pulling out all the stops to promote this thing, which is really nice to see. So there's going to be a ton of news streaming out on the internet this weekend, and at Trek Movie we're going to be there covering everything. So stay tuned for that.
Kayla, will you be our only boots on the ground, or will there be other people there?
No, there's a number of us from Trek Movie going. So it's myself, Andrew, our photographer, Christine, a.k.a. Starfleet Mom, who is one of our social media experts.
Oh, great.
And Joe, who has been doing our comic reviews.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so we'll have four people there. That's fantastic coverage.
Yeah. So we're going to be really at it from every angle, I think. So.
Yep.
Expect a lot of stuff flying at you this weekend.
I really appreciate that there'll be so many people there, because I'll be honest, Comic-Con used to be the kind of thing I wanted to go to, and then you see lines and hear horror stories about how difficult it is to get hotel rooms or whatever, and I'm like, this is something I can just enjoy on Twitter and YouTube instead.
Yeah, honestly, that's a good way to do it, because it's basically, if you want to go into a panel at Comic-Con, it's basically waiting in line all day long. There's already people talking about camping outside of the room where the Discovery panel is going to be.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I mean it's great that there's that much behind it, but it's chaotic.
Yeah, I would not do that.
Yeah, those big giant conventions like San Diego and New York, they're almost too much in my opinion.
It's
just like body to body, and there's so many things clamoring for your attention at all times. Mm-hmm. Like, not really my cup of tea.
And honestly, that's one of the things I really like about the Las Vegas convention we always go to, is they have kept it a nice size where you never feel overwhelmed.
Yep. It's a cozy convention.
Yeah.
Anyway. Big stuff this weekend.
Yeah, so keep your eyes peeled, and thank you to the good members of the Trek Movie crew who are beaming into Southern California for this.
Indeed.
Anything else on that, Kayla?
I think that pretty much covers everything that's coming out of Comic-Con. I mean, there's just so much going on. It's going to be pretty much every moment new news and... new events happening. And CBS also has some interactive events that they're going to be doing. So if you watch their Twitter and Instagram accounts, they're going to tell you where to go take pictures with certain people in costumes from different eras of different Star Trek series. And if you collect all of them, you can win prizes and stuff like that. So they're doing a ton of stuff, getting people ramped up for this.
Oh, cool. That's nice to see some creativity with that.
Definitely. It's nice to see Star Trek get some serious publicity at a giant convention like that. It's been a long time.
Even when the movies were out, it wasn't quite as big as this. So, and this is, you know, television is Star Trek's bread and butter. So it really feels like Trek is coming home. And I think CBS are aware of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's exciting.
It is. So there's a lot other, there's been other Discovery news. Today was actually a fairly, for a Monday, it was quite busy. Out of nowhere, they tweeted this 10-second video showcasing the new communicator.
Oh, interesting.
Which is basically a modernized version of the original series communicator. It's got little bits of the original series, a cage, and a little bit of the Wrath of Khan all rolled into one. Right, Kayla?
Yeah, it's a really gorgeous thing. It's like, take the TOS communicator, give it some nice modern lines, the, you know, some brass accents and glass, and add some flashing displays, and it's a really beautiful thing. It's for a 10-second or less even clip, I was really excited about it.
Oh, great.
Yeah, it looks cool. It honors the original look of the communicator, and as I said earlier today, it tastefully updates it. So that for those people who scream about canon all the time and get all worried about it, they really, at least with the communicator, are genuinely trying to like bring things forward to the modern times without making it so incongruous that it doesn't fit.
Yeah.
Right.
At least with the communicator. We'll see where everything else goes from here.
That's not an easy task. To modernize something, but because we want it to look more modern than a 1960s television show,
sure,
not so modern that it looks out of place, given that it's set before the era of the 1960s television show. So
exactly,
right. So it was cool. I think it was generally well received by a lot of people, including some of the folks who were kind of negative toward the whole thing. So
yeah, really positive fan response.
Wow.
It seemed to get that. That's good. It did.
That's good.
So far, so good, at least.
Well, if you can make Star Trek fans happy, that's saying a lot.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, we're not an easy bunch to satisfy, are we? I think we are the most high maintenance fan base in all of fandom. I think that.
No question at all.
Yeah. We're a pain in the ass.
I would think so.
But that same pain in the assiness is what allows us to do a podcast that dives deep into individual episodes or even moments from a show that's 30 or 50 years old. You know, how many people can take something like that that's been talked about to death and still find new things to say and enjoy that kind of conversation? You know, it's a very Trekky thing. So it's a double-edged sword.
True. Yep. And this goes over much better than my Small Wonder podcast ever does. Nobody listens to that at all. Sorry, that joke didn't land. Small Wonder was this terrible TV show from the 80s about this guy who created a robot daughter. Anyway, never mind. So exactly. But we talk about random episodes of TNG from 30 years ago, and people still have strong opinions on them.
All right, so I think we're ready to dive into
to segue. Talking
yeah, TNG. Speaking of that.
To do a okay, segue. So,
yeah, thank you. Thank you for the graceful segue. So let me just give a little background on the genesis of this. I actually first got the ideas to do this when I was reading through the Wikipedia page for Star Trek The Original Series, because there's a, and we can include the link to this on the site, there's a section that says notable episodes. And it gives the top 10 lists from four different outlets, Entertainment Weekly, IGN, Newsweek, and Hollywood.com. And on those top 10, of those four top 10 lists, only 16 different episodes are listed, and 10 of them appear on at least three of the four lists. And that's Amok Time, Arena, Balance of Terror, Journey to Babel, Mirror Mirror, Space Seed, City on the Edge of Forever, Doomsday Machine, Enterprise Incident, Trouble with Tribbles. And I ripped through that pretty fast. So that's not the focus of this episode. But as I look at that, that might be my top 10 list, right? With just one or two changes. So I think there's some pretty good consensus as to what the cream of the crop was for the original series, but not necessarily for TNG. And we were talking about this a few weeks ago on our internal Slack thread. I'm not sure what triggered it, but it was one of those fun things where we were talking about some news of the day, and then all of a sudden we're giving our top 10 lists of TOS. And then we're like, but wait, why weren't there comparable top 10 lists for TNG? And so that's what we're going to try to dive into today. That's what we're going to try to explore. Yes, Kayla.
Well, what I thought was interesting when you brought up the idea of doing a top 10 TNG episodes for the podcast, at first I was thinking that's nothing new and it's too much material to talk about. But the way you sold me on it is this idea that there are a number of episodes that we could argue would appear on anyone's top 10 list, but maybe there's five of those. And then there's five more that are kind of the grab bag ones, right? They could be anything depending on who you are.
Yeah. I think there are five set and then five open slots.
Yeah. Yeah. So then the idea that each of us could come up with what our other five episodes would be beyond the sort of generally accepted five episodes that would go in a top 10 list. What are those other five that have a bit more wiggle room? And that's what I think is interesting about this.
Oh, yeah. Good. I'm glad people were on board with this. So from our internal discussions and from looking at different top 10 lists on the internet and otherwise, these are what I think are generally regarded the best five episodes from TNG. We have Best of Both Worlds, at least the first half, certainly. Yesterday's Enterprise, The Inner Light, which of course won the Hugo Award, Chain of Command, and All Good Things, which I think also won the Hugo Award. So I think pretty much any TNG fan, these are going to be on their top 10 list. I don't know if there's anywhere where you guys might dispute that.
Can we give a little one sentence synopsis to remind people who don't remember the episode names?
Yeah. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Yeah. So All Good Things is of course the finale with Picard and Q. Chain of Command is the one where Riker's left in charge of the Enterprise with the terrible boss while Picard is captured by the Cardassians. Yeah, I love that. I mean, I love the Riker storyline better than the Picard storyline.
With Captain Jellicoe?
Jellicoe.
I like Jellicoe.
Who says get it done instead of make it so?
Exactly.
Yeah. And is kind of a jerk, except for the fact that can we all agree that we love how he puts Deanna in an actual uniform, finally.
Yeah. Yeah, that, I think that Marina Sirtis had some more to do with that than Captain Jellicoe did. But
well, the in-universe. Thank you to in-universe Captain Jellicoe.
Well done. Okay, The Inner Light, of course, that's the one where Picard learns to play the flute, the Resikian flute, due to his how would you even describe it?
He interfaces with this probe, but like sends a beam into him, and he lives this entire other life. You know, in his mind, essentially. But he lives out an entire, whatever it would have been, 40 or 50 years as another man on a planet. And then comes back with those experiences.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, it ends with that beautiful shot of him playing the flute to show that this is something that he carries with him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then Yesterday's Enterprise, that, of course, is the one where we bring back Tasha Yar, where there's a change to the timeline. And the Federation is at war with the Klingons, and the solution is to send the Enterprise C back in time, essentially on a suicide mission, which it really is a masterpiece. You look at what they did and the limited time and the budget they had, and it's amazing that they were able to pull that off. Mm-hmm. I just love the little things they do to make the uniforms look different and a little more militaristic, little things they do to make 10 Forward look less hospitable. And then, of course, that ending scene where the Klingons are attacking and they say, "We order you to surrender." And Captain Picard says, "That'll be the day." And he like jumps over the I don't know what to call it, the security station to start shooting after Riker gets killed. Anyway, fantastic episode. Then, of course, Best of Both Worlds is the Borg two-parter. Right. So
Locutus of Borg.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although I think it might be agreed that part one is a hell of a lot better than part two.
No question. Yeah, but even if we just put part one, that would still
that be works.
Oh yeah,
on this list.
Yeah, totally.
And something as I look at this, of the five, three of them are two-parters, and so maybe that's a little unfair because two-parters have a little bit more weight. But as we see, not all the TNG two-parters are winners. Right. So, I mean, there's that one where, like, Worf goes to find his dad, and I don't think that one works particularly well.
Anyway, I kind of like that one.
Oh, do you? See, the thing is, I like
masks.
Oh well, I don't want to dispute you on your love of masks. I would never want to come between you and that. Okay, so we were looking. If this is half the list, what's the other half? What's the bottom five of the TNG top 10? And so what we did is we circulated this and we all picked on the Trek Movie Staff 7 episodes we thought were really good that should fill that in. Not everyone who voted on this was able to participate today on the podcast. All right, so what we have is we took some internal votes, had some internal discussions. And what we did is we came up with 5 episodes that we thought could fill in that top 10 list to round it out. That appeared on the most, we got the most feedback, positive feedback from the Trek Movie staff as we were looking at this. And so what we're going to do is we're going to talk about those 5, and then each of us may have an honorable mention or two on top of that at the end. So we'll go through, and I guess we'll do this like a top 10 list. Although there's no necessarily specific weighting rated awarded to this, but what we wanted to say as number 6 is Tapestry. That was the one that appeared on everybody's list. There's no dispute about that one. Yeah. Just a little synopsis. This is the one. It's a callback to the episode Samaritan Snare, which was kind of an average second season episode. And what happens is Picard is on a mission. There's an energy discharge, and it ruins his artificial heart. And he has basically a near-death experience with Q, where he sees himself as a young man. And the whole message is Picard was embarrassed of his behavior as a young man, where he was too impetuous, and his original heart was damaged due to getting in a fight with some quote-unquote surly Nausicaans. And then because of that, because it had to be replaced by what Q calls an unreliable piece of technology, he was hurt and looked like he was going to die, you know, years before his time on some random mission. And this is a very, very heartfelt episode. It's very thoughtful. There's this great speech Q gives at the end where that's very philosophical about how, you know, if the thing that Picard was embarrassed of, his impetuousness, was also the thing that made him such a great leader, because it made him more ambitious and more of a risk taker. And he says, like, the same kid who got in the fight with the Nausicaans is the same officer who took the bridge of the Stargazer when its captain died. Beautiful episode. Fantastic. I think I've mentioned this before. I wrote a fan letter to Ronald Moore, who wrote this in the early 90s, and he sent me back, and just saying it was a great episode it was, and he sent me back a signed copy of the screenplay. Easily my most treasured piece of Trek memorabilia, and probably my personal favorite episode, not just of TNG, but of the entire franchise. So
wow, I did not know that.
I didn't either. Oh, that's so amazing.
Had I not told you that, guys? Yeah, no. It was fantastic. No. I was blown away when he did that.
That's so cool.
Anyway, I kind of went off that a bit.
Tapestry is definitely one of my favorite episodes, and for me, it had to be on this list.
Yes, me too.
It's a Picard-centric episode, which I really like, and you get to see Picard's early life and learn a lot about him, which is really intriguing to me. But I think the message behind it is what I love the most, this idea that everything that we've done in our lifetime has shaped us to be the person that we are today. And if you change any of those things, we're not the same person. So, you know, you see Picard was basically saying, you know, I could live now being when he damaged his artificial heart. He's like, I could live through this if I had had a real heart. And I could go back in time and undo the thing that gave me this fake heart. It was a stupid thing. Anyway, I have regrets, so I can go fix that. And he learns that, you know, without having done that, it led him onto the series of events that made him really a timid person, someone who doesn't take risks, doesn't take chances. And so because he never took those risks and those chances, he never ended up as the captain of the flagship of the Federation. And instead, he was some science officer who no one really knew, and he didn't have the opportunity to affect the universe like he has. So it's just, what a great story. It's like, it's almost like it's like no regrets. You know, don't regret these things you've done in your past, because whether you like it or not, they've shaped you to who you are today.
Yeah, fantastic message. And you look at how young Ronald Moore was when he wrote this. I think he was younger than all three of us when he wrote this. And it's like,
I don't think he was even 30 years old when he wrote this.
Yeah. How does he have that kind of presence of mind? Just amazing.
That's incredible.
Anyway, Brent, do you have any final thoughts on Tapestry?
Like most of the best Star Trek episodes, it has something in it that you can relate to on a personal level.
Yeah.
And I think we all sometimes wonder about the other roads that we could have traveled.
Yeah. As Kirk says in Wrath of Khan, my life that could have been but wasn't.
Yeah. Like Picard with the Narsekins, we all have that was obviously a huge juncture in his life and it shaped his future. And we all have those. Maybe not as dramatic as taking a knife through the heart.
Yeah.
But we all have certain key moments in our lives that ultimately shape us. And he had Q gave him the opportunity to see that, he shouldn't regret his past. He should embrace it because it made him who he was. I'm basically echoing something kind of what Kayla said. But
yeah, but it's still good. It bears repeating.
It does. Like I said, it's very, very relatable. We would all, I think, at some point, like to have the opportunity that Q gave Picard.
Yeah,
and it's a well balanced episode too. It's got levity, it's got drama, it's got heart,
action.
It's well rounded.
A little bit of sex, and then,
very little bit.
Very little, and then at some point Q appears as Sigmund Freud. The other thing I love about this episode is the evolution of Picard's relationship with Q.
Hmm.
Where this is not antagonistic at all, right? And the thing that kind of bugs me is I feel like this should have been the follow-up to Deja Q instead of Captain's Holiday. Because this is Q paying Picard back for saving his life when he was mortal.
Ooh, yeah.
But that's okay. That's okay. Anyway, closing thoughts. Tapestry, one of the greats.
Definitely. It would not... There would... Any top 10 list. I might even put it in my personal top 5. I don't know. I really like Tapestry. It's definitely one of my favorites. Yeah.
It's magnificent. Well, if you like Tapestry as a great Picard vehicle, we have a great Data vehicle coming up next, which I think would appear on most people's top 10 list. And that would be, drumroll, The Measure of a Man. Kayla, do you want to give us... do you want to tell us what happens in that episode?
Sure. Measure of a Man is, again, I totally agree with this being on the top 10 list, one of my favorites. And it answers, it maybe doesn't answer a question, but it discusses a theme that we see a lot of in science fiction. And it's something that we're still struggling with today, that scientists are struggling with today. And it's this question of how do you define life, right? How do you define whether or not a thing is alive? And this is a question that it's particularly interesting for me following NASA missions and astrobiology and being a geologist. It might seem like this is far removed from that, but actually when we go out to explore the geology of other worlds, a lot of the direction and why we choose to explore certain places is because we're interested in looking for extraterrestrial life. But how do we know what that life looks like when we find it? Will it be obvious? Will it walk and talk and communicate with us? Or will it be a microbe, or will it be something like a plant, or will it be completely something we can't even imagine? And with Data, he has this thing where he looks like a human, he talks like a human, he communicates with you, but under the surface...
We refer to him using a gender pronoun, not it, right?
Right, unless you're early Pulaski.
Yeah.
But that's for another podcast that we've already done. But with Data, he seems like he's alive and sentient, but beneath the surface, he's circuitry. He's a computer, right?
Yeah.
So then you get to this question of, is he really alive, or is he a computer that's mimicking life? What about humans? Are humans just computers? Are humans alive? It's like, what is the real definition for life? And it's something that science fiction has struggled with that concept a lot. And I think The Measure of a Man is a favorite because it does so well with that issue. And because they're putting Data as the face of this issue, so the audience is rooting for him to be ruled alive, right?
Of course.
And it's Picard that is able to give an amazing argument as to why Data should be considered, should not be cast aside. Even if there's a remote possibility that he's alive, you know, he explains why, Picard explains eloquently why that's so important, and why he should be given human rights, basically.
Yeah.
So it's this issue of what is life. It's this issue of human rights and who deserves those rights. You know, what should we even call them, human rights? You know, life rights. So there's social commentary in there. There's a lot going on in there, and it's just, I think it's the eloquent package that it's presented in via Picard's amazing speeches and Patrick Stewart's amazing acting. I think that's what makes this such a great episode.
See, and it's not just Picard though. Because he's losing the case, and the thing that gives him the push over the cliff is the conversation with Guinan. And Guinan has this great exchange with him in 10 Forward where she doesn't come out and tell him this is what you need to say. She kind of coaches him into it. So he comes to the conclusion rather than just her telling him. And what she does is she gets Picard to use the word slave, right? And the significance of that is also, this episode was just a couple years after Whoopi Goldberg had been in The Color Purple. And so without really spelling it out, they kind of spell it out. And so, magnificent on several different levels, including the intertextuality of using Guinan as best as they possibly could.
Mm-hmm.
It also has one of the more chilly moments in the whole series when Riker turns Data off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and then he refers.
That still startles me every time I watch it.
And the most startling thing is, I think he refers.
Yeah, it's like, holy shit.
Doesn't he refer to him as Pinocchio again? Like, he says Pinocchio's strings have been cut.
Yes,
which is a callback to when he first met Data. He calls him Pinocchio.
So it is
very chilling. I hadn't even thought of that until you mentioned it.
Yeah, I never got used to that. Every time he does that, especially because it's Riker doing it to him, it's just like, whoa.
I will say that's the one thing that kind of doesn't work for me is the way that Riker gets coerced into being the adversary. Because it just seems like he wouldn't be that brutal. Like, why would he be? What's his incentive? Because he doesn't need to be that way. Anyway.
Yeah, but you know, we had been told up to that point that Will Riker was this very driven officer.
Yeah.
So once he was given the assignment, as much as he may have objected to it on a personal level, he was gonna try to win.
Mm.
Like, yeah, this was still a younger Will Riker. This is not the soft Will Riker of like season 5 and 6.
Yeah, that made sense to me.
All right. Okay. I accept that.
Yeah, I thought he gave it his all. Like, you know,
I think it's like
he did not phone it in, that's for sure.
It was like a duty thing for me too. Like, you know, Riker is pretty loyal to Starfleet and to his duty in Starfleet. And if his duty is to play this role, then he was going to do it, and he was going to do the best job he could, even if he hated it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, exactly.
I'm wondering if we should play a clip from the episode, because I have to say the speech that Picard gives at the end is just so amazing. Should I just read it for you, because I have it in front of me?
Read it.
Okay.
But please affect a British accent.
I can't do a good Picard-style accent.
No!
All right, Your Honor, the courtroom is a crucible. In it, we burn away irrelevancies until we are left with a purer product, the truth for all time. Now, sooner or later, this man, Commander Maddox, or others like him, will succeed in replicating Commander Data. The decision you reach here today will determine how we will regard this creation of our genius. It will reveal the kind of people we are, what he is destined to be. It will reach far beyond this courtroom and this one android. It could significantly redefine the boundaries of personal liberty and freedom, expanding them for some, savagely curtailing them for others.
I love that line, curtailing.
Yeah. Are you prepared to condemn him, Commander Data, and all who will come after him, to servitude and slavery? Your Honor, Starfleet was founded to seek out new life. Well, there it sits, waiting. I remember when he says, well, there it sits.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a classic Star Trek
movie. I know. Perfect. It's so good.
That's a Star Trek speech.
Yeah, it is.
If there ever was a Star Trek speech, that's it. I mean, you could, I think we've discussed this,
by the way. We did an episode on Picard speeches.
Yeah, you could give the speech to Kirk and barely touch it, and he could recite this. Right. You could give it to Janeway and it could almost not change a word, and it would completely work. Because it is so core to Star Trek's beliefs.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. I could definitely, while I was hearing the words in Picard's voice, I could totally hear Kirk saying the same words.
Yeah. Yeah. Quintessential Star Trek episode.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, on that note, let's move to... Oh, this one kind of surprised me that it was on the list, but not unpleasantly. And this is probably, of all of them, the most solid, like, clever science fiction-y one. And that would be the fifth season episode, Cause and Effect. This is the one that opens more dramatically than any cold open in all Star Trek history, where we've got, the red alert klaxon is blaring, the bridge is shaking. Beverly says, we got casualty reports coming in from all over the ship. Other people are shouting stuff about their own duty stations. And then Picard, while he's saying, all hands abandon ship is cut off. By the very memorable image of the Enterprise D getting the crap exploded out of it.
Yeah. That was the best explanation of that cold open ever. Love it.
Thank you. May the great bird of the galaxy bless your planet.
Yeah, it was probably the greatest teaser in the history of the Star Trek franchise.
No question. Just magnificent. And to think, you're watching it for the first time and you see that while you're sitting down to dinner with your family, and then it's like, whoa. Well, what are they going to do for an encore?
Right?
Yeah, I remember watching it for the first time going, oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. Pretty.
Where are they going with this?
Pretty cool. And then it cuts and, it's just a normal day and we're left to wonder what's going on, right? And one of the things I like about this is no one ever explains it to us. We learn what's happening as the crew learns what's happening. And in fact, one of the things we mentioned, the inner light earlier, that kind of bugs me about that is we see what's happening right as it's happening. Like, we see Picard is on the bridge, we see the Resekian probe hit him, and we know exactly what's going on, that it's a hallucination. I think the episode would have worked better if it had just started with him in this other life, and we don't really learn it. We learn what's happening to Picard as he does, and that's what they do with Cause and Effect. And they're caught in this time loop where they keep experiencing the same few days over and over again. And they keep having deja vu. And they're like, what's happening? We need to figure this out. They do some Star Trek science-y stuff. There's this awesome scene at the poker table where Data subconsciously stacks the deck so that he feeds people cards. And there's this great bit of writing where they're feeding up to it, where every time we see the poker game, they say... And Data's shuffling. They say, sometimes I wonder if he's stacking the deck. And of course he's not, because Data's not a cheater. But then they figure out a way to send him, his positronic brain, this message through time. He subconsciously feeds everyone the number 3, right? And we don't even know what that means. What is the number 3? And then in the final climactic episode or moment where the ship is about to explode, we see he looks to Riker's 3 pips, right? And Riker had the idea to open the shuttle bay door and blast the ship out of the way, the Enterprise out of the way of the ship that's coming through the time loop. And Data had the idea to use the tractor beam. And then Picard goes with Data's plan, of course. And then when Data sees Riker's 3 pips, he's like, nope, my plan was wrong. We need to go with Riker's plan. And so they do that. The day is saved. They break the loop. And we're able to continue. But a very momentous week in the life of the crew. It's also one of those things where, because it's a time loop, they can do anything they want, and it doesn't have effect on the continuity. So they can blow up the ship. And they don't just do it once, but they do it like 5 times in the course of the episode.
Yeah. And I would like to point out that this is not the only episode where, if you said, hey, remember that one episode where the Enterprise keeps blowing up? There's actually 2.
Oh.
If you count Timescape.
Timescape.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
Which has some members of the senior staff. Let's see, Picard and Deanna. I'm trying to remember all who's on the...
Geordi and Data are the other two.
And Data are on a shuttlecraft, and they're coming up to the Enterprise, and they see it with a beam coming from between the Enterprise and a Romulan ship. And then it keeps explode. It explodes, and then it goes backwards, and it explodes again. And it goes backwards, and they realize they're caught in this weird temporal loop thingy. Yeah. So that's, yes, I had written next to my vote for cause and effect, Timescape, since they're very similar. And I think both of them, for me, satisfy the same itch and sort of fall on my top 10 list for similar reasons. Because who doesn't want an watch an episode where the Enterprise keeps blowing up? It's exciting.
Yeah, it is. It's dramatic. Yeah. So the thing I love about, one of the things I love about this episode, and TNG was pretty good about this in general, and you mentioned Timescape, so that kind of supports it, is frequently with these time travel stories, it's always something bad happened in the past that wasn't supposed to happen, and we need to go back to restore it. To, one Dr. Sam Beckett might say on Quantum Leap, to put right what once went wrong. And so the thing that that I love about this is they find a time travel idea that isn't that, right? And I mean, I guess the thing that goes wrong is the Enterprise keeps blowing up, but it's not, we need to go back in time to make sure Edith Keeler dies or anything like that.
Right, right, right.
So both Timescape and Cause and Effect are very creative.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a quintessential Brennan Braga high concept episode.
Yeah. This is Brennan Braga at his best. And the thing, I'm just going to say this, that bugs me is people like to dog on Brennan Braga for having written so many bad episodes or whatever. And it's like, he wrote more episodes than anybody else. All of them are not winners, but a lot of them are. And like, some, I
damn
remember
right.
2 years ago, someone tweeted him like, what are your 5 worst episodes? It's like, hey, can we tweet him? What do you think are your 5 best episodes, Brennan? Because I think, didn't he also write All Good Things?
Yeah, he co-wrote All Good Things.
Yeah, and I think he also co-wrote First Contact. So come on, let's cut him some
the
slack.
The dude is very talented.
Yes, he is.
The dude
is like,
very talented.
I like the Brennan Braga. I never had a problem with the guy.
Yeah, if Mr. Braga's pop... Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, when you write high concept stuff, when that's your bailiwick, you are going to fall flat on your face every once in a while.
Sure.
You just are.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you're going to have a cause and effect, and you're going to have a threshold. I mean, that's what's going to happen. No, but that's really what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're going to overshoot the mark too far,
and
it's going to blow up in your face. That's the nature of trying to work in that kind of genre of science fiction.
In baseball, it's called swinging for the fences, right?
Yeah, but Brennan gave us a lot of great Star Trek. I have no problem with that guy. I think he gets a bad rap.
Yeah, I think it's unfair.
Unjustified.
Yeah.
Did he write Timescape as well? I'm just double checking fast. Yes, he wrote Timescape as well.
Yeah.
So
nice.
Yeah,
that's two for two on this list here. For
and
one
I
of
love,
our top 10.
I love both of those episodes. Timescape is really memorable. I think everyone everyone remembers the part where Picard draws a smiley face in the warp exhaust.
The nitrogen narcosis.
Narcosis, yeah. He starts laughing and gets all goofy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Great episode. Great episode. I never get tired of watching it.
And then, which is interesting because sometimes these Groundhog Day type things, you're watching the same thing over and over again, and so it can get tiresome, but not with this. That's hallmark of good direction, I think.
Yep.
The other thing I have to say is I love the cameo at the end with Fraser Crane as Captain Morgan,
I was about to say that,
Morgan Bateson. Kelsey Grammer.
Yep.
Kelsey Grammer,
yep.
And
the USS Bozeman.
Bozeman, yes. Yep. Which, of course, why is Bozeman, Montana significant to Starfleet, Kayla?
Well, a little town called Bozeman, Montana is where the Phoenix launched from in Star Trek First Contact.
Yeah.
Where we first made contact with the Vulcans on Earth.
Yep, so that's a nice little... Because we didn't know that at that point, and so I think it's a nice little callback Brandon Braga wrote for himself. Where he's like, oh, the name of this ship that I used in an episode a few years ago, boom, I'm going to make it significant.
Or else maybe Bozeman, Montana has a special place in Brennan's heart.
Oh, it could be. I don't know. I have to ask him.
Actually, I think Brennan is not from California. He may be from, like, Montana.
Oh, interesting.
Checking.
Like, he's not, like, a Southern California guy, I don't think. Like, he wasn't born and raised in, like, L.A. or whatever.
Mm. I think he might have been born there. Hold on.
Oh,
there you go.
There we go.
He was born August 14th, 1965, in Bozeman, Montana, United States of America.
There we go.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
There,
wheels within wheels.
We've all learned a little bit of Trek trivia today.
He made Star Trek's birthplace his backyard.
Yeah.
Why the
heck
not? I
always love it when I can learn something about the franchise that I didn't know already.
How about it?
There you go.
Okay, anything else closing? Oh, the one other thing about Cause and Effect, a lot of people maybe know this. They talked about trying to get Savick, Kirstie Alley, to, because of course she'd been co-workers with Frasier on Cheers. So they thought about trying to get her and have her just standing in the background as like his first officer. And of course, if she'd been in the background, she would have had some lines as well. They're not going to get Savick to come back and just have her be a prop. That didn't happen. Would have been nice if it had. Maybe someday they'll do a special edition where they Photoshop her face in. Okay.
Anyway, great episode.
Yeah,
terrific. Fun one.
I think of all our discussions, that's the one I need to go rewatch. But going from high concept to probably the lowest concept Star Trek of all time, we have the episode Family, which I actually think maybe I mentioned this before, but when we talk about Family, this is the episode that made Best of Both Worlds retroactively a Picard episode instead of a Riker episode, which is what it actually is, right? Mm-hmm. So this is basically the third part of the Best of Both Worlds cycle. And they realized, and I really admired that they did this, that they couldn't have life and death and the destruction of Earth and just say, okay, well, what's our next adventure? They had to do, I think what music is called, a little coda, where they just kind of finish it out, or a postscript maybe. And the idea is, we're back on Earth for the first time, and people are interacting with members of their family. We see Wesley sees a hologram of his deceased father that he made when he was a baby. We see, Riker and Troy go, I think, hiking in Nepal or something. We see Worf's parents come up to the Enterprise, and they talk to him about the discommendation. And so this is a way of continuing that line that started in Sins of the Father and would go to Redemption, which would be the season 4 cliffhanger. But then, most importantly, we see Picard return to France and we see his interaction with his brother and sister-in-law and his nephew. So that's kind of the key up. So the two of you, why did you think this was important to include on our top 10 list, above and beyond what I just gave in the summary?
For me personally, it finally really humanized Jean-Luc Picard. Mm. Up till that point, I had slightly warmed up to him over the first 3 years of the show, but he still came across in many ways to me as like a stiff ass. Like, he could just be very uptight and occasionally like snotty and unpleasant, and I didn't always care for him. This episode like pulls away the veneer, any kind of veneer he had as a starship captain or as this, you know, educated man. Anything that was built, that he had built up about himself over the years, had been torn away by the Borg.
Yeah. Oh, well, or not just torn away, but really turned into a weapon against his friends.
Right. Like, yeah, he was completely, I mean, he was raped. He was
essentially,
Picard was raped by the Borg.
Yeah.
And you finally see him when he falls apart in front of his brother and starts crying.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a huge moment for that character.
Yeah.
Like, you just, like, I developed a tremendous amount of empathy for him based on that episode, to the point, like, he's my favorite character from TNG, but it started there with that episode.
Wow.
Family's a big episode for me for TNG. I like the fact that it's a character based episode. It's almost, there's no plot.
No, there isn't. There isn't.
There's no plot whatsoever. I love it. It's like the Enterprise is home, everybody's visiting, tending to personal matters, and you get to learn a little bit more about everybody.
Yeah.
And I think that's wonderful. And I think the show should have done more of that, to be honest.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hmm. And I think it's symptomatic of the time that it was made that there weren't more episodes like this, and very innovative that they did this at all.
Well, they had to fight to do it.
That's what I heard. That's what I heard. You probably know.
Gene and Rick Berman didn't want to do it. They wanted to just go back into a regular show. And
seriously?
Yeah, you realize what just happened to Picard? You can't just you can't just like go back to normal the following week.
Yeah.
Something has to, you have to follow up on that somehow.
Yeah, you can't just say walk it off, princess.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Anyway, this episode is very close to my heart. It's one of my favorite all-time Star Trek episodes.
Yeah.
So this one did not make it onto my other five list. So I think this wouldn't necessarily make it onto my top 10 list. But I don't know. I mean, hearing the way that you talk about it, Brian, really makes me want to go back and rewatch it. I think you bring up a really good point about needing not only closure, but needing to deal with the things that had happened to him. Like when you said, I really agree when you say, you know, Picard was essentially raped by the Borg, and it wouldn't have been a good and it wouldn't have been a very Star Trek message to just move on and forget about
that.
Yeah.
And yeah, Jared, you're probably right about it being systematic of the time when TNG was made that you didn't see more of that because it was, you know, very serialized. The reset button is pressed at the end of every episode and you go back to start another adventure next week. But in this case, I think it says even more that they didn't do that in this particular case. It shows how important this event was on Picard's life. And, you know, if you carry on that metaphor of rape, how you can't hit the reset button on that when it when things like this happen to people in real life and there's PTSD and there's things to deal with. So from that, you know, it's something honestly I hadn't given that much thought to, the way that you describe it, Brian. So I think that definitely makes me feel like the episode has more weight now after listening to you talk about it. Before our conversation today, I think it wouldn't have made my list. Honestly, for me, it's not a particularly memorable episode. Certain moments in it I remember, but overall, I mean, there's some stuff like with Wesley that I always thought was a little weird.
And a lot of the Wesley stuff is just frankly, at that point, kind of just reminding you that he's there.
Right. The Wesley thing, I didn't feel like went much. And then, I don't know, the Worf and the Rozhenkos thing, I guess that's interesting, kind of. But I don't know. I'm not as invested in the life of the Rozhenkos. Right?
No, I agree. It's a Picard episode.
Yeah. So, I guess, because there's several storylines going on in this episode. And I don't think I remember much about any of them. Except Picard in France with his brother.
Yeah, and so much of the rest is kind of just allowing you time to breathe in between the Picard stuff.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Because we see it's not just Picard dealing with the weight of his assimilation, but it's also him coming to terms with the fact that he and his brother have hated each other.
Right. So yeah, I think that's one I would rewatch. I haven't seen it in a while, and because usually I would go and watch, you know, the Borg episodes, and then go on and do something else. But it's been probably years and years, maybe decades, since I've done, you know, the Borg two-parter and then Family. So that would maybe be a fun exercise to watch all three of those.
Yeah, and you're older now, Kayla, too. It might have more resonance now to you than it did 10 years
for
ago.
For sure.
Something I want to say about how original or distinct this episode is. There's this online Star Trek reviewer I like named SF Debris. I don't know if you guys have ever listened to any of his stuff. He's been doing video reviews for years and years about Star Trek. And every time he finishes an episode, he gives it a ranking like from 1 to 10 in terms of 1 being the worst of the series and 10 being the best. Family is the only episode he never gave a ranking to because it's so unusual. It just doesn't mesh with the rest of the TNG. Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah, well, it's certainly the only character-driven piece.
Yeah, because
TNG.
Because even like, you know, Haven, where Deanna is supposed to get married, and there's all the soap opera with her and Riker. There's still also this mission of there's this plague ship, and we need to try to heal these people who are terminally ill, right? So there's still like Star Trek stuff going on. It's not just Deanna's wedding.
Right. And I think Rick Berman tried to push for some sort of Star Trek plot to go on during this episode.
That would have been so stupid.
Yeah, and I think Ron Moore was able to push back hard enough to the point where Berman just gave up.
Yeah.
And let it be a nice character piece.
Good.
So, yeah, it's an unusual episode.
Yeah. But
well worth it. It has a resonance later too. With Renee, his nephew, because you get to meet Renee, you get to see they develop a relationship throughout the episode, and then you know when he dies later, he's not just this like faceless family member that you don't know.
Yeah,
you understand Picard, how shattered Picard is by it. When his brother and his nephew die, because you know them.
Yep.
You've been with them. Yeah. You've been at the, you've been in their home. You can relate to what happened, you know, their lives a little bit. So
we also they brought Rene back, of course, to anyone knows, to play the young Picard in Rascals. So we were familiar with this young man.
Yeah, he was great in that too.
Yeah, he's terrific.
I love when he
throws the tantrum.
Yeah, it's a cute little episode.
Yeah. All right, family, any closing thoughts?
I think
it absolutely belongs on the top 10 list.
Me too.
Yeah. I'm glad we agree about the list that we put together for our podcast. Okay, so next one. This is rounding it out. This is our last of the five that we all agreed on 100%, and this is a very memorable one. This is perhaps the only instance I know where a science fiction hero shows off his badassery using linguistics. And Kayla, what episode is that going to be?
That can only be Darmok, of course. I think it's one of the most memorable episodes in all of Star Trek, and it's certainly one that transcends the fan base. So if you meet someone who's sort of a casual fan who's seen not every episode, but a lot of them, you know, sort of a middle-of-the-road fan, and you say to them, you know, Darmok and Jalata to Nagra, they'll know exactly what you're talking about.
Absolutely.
Which is one line of essentially nonsense from this, you know, from this episode. We find out that it has meaning, but it's fake words that somehow resonate with people. And it's a real, I think we've talked about Darmok on the podcast before, but it's such a unique storyline. So, of course, for those of you who don't remember the episode, it's the one where the Enterprise encounters this species, and I think no one's been able to ever communicate with them. The universal translators don't seem to work with them. No one can figure out their language or syntax, and they're having trouble communicating. And then both Picard and the captain of this alien ship get beamed down to a planet, seemingly to battle to the death. And there's just the two of them. The Enterprise can't get Picard back, so he's out there on his own. No one knows what's going on, and Picard has to figure out what to do with this guy. Is he supposed to fight him? You know, what is he supposed to be doing here? Try to learn how to communicate with him, and eventually he learns, of course, that this species communicates using metaphor, using stories from their history. So Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra described, you know, two men who had, I can't remember the exact story, but two men who had sailed an ocean and met on an island and had to fight some foe together. And that's essentially what they were recreating these two captains on the planet, was the two of them were going to have to fight a foe together to learn about each other and to learn how to communicate and get along. And what a cool concept. I think it's just such a unique, not like a lot of the great episodes of Star Trek touch on science fiction themes that are kind of tried and true, been around forever, sci-fi themes. And this is one that I don't know has been done before or since in quite the same way.
Okay, I'm gonna provide a counter opinion to what you just said.
Sure.
Because this is the TNG version of Arena. I mean, this premise is exactly the same. The captain of the Enterprise is beamed against his will to an alien planet to fight an opposing captain, right?
Right, but that's not the exact same setup, right? The story is not exactly about that, though.
And the thing that makes it so awesome is they found a way to do a concept with our captain that had been done with our previous captain, and it's very different, and they're both awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I guess what I mean, it hasn't been done. I'm talking about the specific linguistics challenge.
Sure. That's the puzzle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That particular puzzle, I think, is something that I haven't really seen before or since.
Yeah. Also, very risky, kind of like what I said about cause and effect, very risky to set this up so that the audience don't know what's going on, because it would have been very easy to let us know what was happening. And so when the crew finally comes to it, we've already seen who the killer is, so to speak. But it's a little bit more of a risk to have the first half of the episode be that not only the crew can't understand what the children of Tama are saying, but neither do the audience understand it. So a risk, and the risk paid off.
And you know what? I might go back a couple steps on what I was saying before. I think the most similar thing I've seen to this is, if you have you guys seen Arrival?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Six months ago or something like that?
Last year.
Fantastic film. If you haven't seen it, I highly recommend it. It's a fabulous science fiction story. But it does really have similar themes, and it's all about linguistics, and it's all about communicating in a fundamentally different way than what we're used to using language. So it's, in that sense, it is actually a lot like Darmok.
Yeah, good call. Good. I didn't think about that, but that makes sense.
This is, in many ways, though, a quintessential Star Trek story, in that it's about trying to find a way to communicate with somebody else.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So much of Star Trek is trying to connect, trying to figure out ways to connect with people who aren't like us.
Overcoming differences.
Yeah, overcoming differences. And to me, like, all I can remember at the end of this episode was thinking, like, wow, if Gene were alive, he would absolutely love this. Like, it's one of those episodes that's just very Star Trek-y.
Yeah, it is.
And it,
like,
yeah.
it's like some of these shows that we're talking about could have been made as other science fiction programs, and it would have been valid. Cause and Effect could have been on another science fiction program.
Yeah, it could have been a Doctor Who episode.
Could have been, but like Darmok and like Measure of a Man, those are like just things that speak so much to what Star Trek is, that like it really just it gives you I get a rush from like watching stuff like that. Like, it, I don't know how else to put it. It's just it just reinforces whatever you like about Star Trek. It probably helps reinforce it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I agree. Think it's about challenging assumptions too a little bit, because these two men are put on the planet with knives or with weapons, and you know, our immediate thought, and Picard's too, is that they're supposed to fight each other, but that was never actually the intention. The intention was for them to work together.
Yeah, Worf jumps to the conclusion, I have faith in the captain's combat abilities.
Well, of course Worf thinks this was going on.
Yeah.
Poor Worf, he's always wrong.
Well, he is and he isn't.
This also
could be its own whole episode. No, that's fine.
This also tackles something that, you know, could theoretically be something that the crew of the Enterprise should deal with all the time, which is that, you know, they meet an alien race that they can't understand. It doesn't, you know, speak anything remotely like English. Although they do. I mean, it's very clear that they're speaking in metaphor.
Sure.
But like,
yeah, because the universal translator can translate their words, but not the meaning.
Right. So you would think this would be something that would happen pretty regularly.
Yeah, but it couldn't. You couldn't tell this story every time.
You know how boring it would be to have to watch everything and like the universal translator repeat everything all the time.
Yeah.
No, so I mean, it's a conceit for television, obviously, but it's cool that they kind of do tackle it.
Yep, because they had to.
At least once.
Yeah.
At least once. Yeah, because they had to. So it was cool. I like that. I do also want to mention that the captain of the alien vessel.
The Temerian ship.
The captain is Paul Winfield, who was a great character actor, who was Captain Terrell in The Wrath of Khan.
Yeah, it's nice to see him come back and be able to be a Star Trek hero again.
Yep. Oh, I always liked his work.
I also want to say, you know, we've all been to a lot of different conventions, you know, and cosplay or whatever. And Kayla, you're better than the three of us at this. I have never gotten as much attention at a convention as the time when I wore my Shaka When the Walls Fell t-shirt. Mm-hmm. What it is, it says Shaka When the Walls Fell, and then it's got Picard doing the face palm. People stopped me constantly to say how clever they thought that was. So just a good metric for how memorable that episode is.
Awesome. Nice. And that's not even the main tagline from the episode.
No, it isn't. It's just one of the other lines. I just want to say, Brian and I, we did our episode about games a couple of weeks ago, and there was I talked about that Decipher card game, that's sort of the Magic the Gathering for Star Trek in the mid-90s. Mm. And they had a whole slew of different cards with names from the different phrases that the Temerians use, or the, you know, Sokath, his eyes unfurled, or Temba, his arms wide, or whatever. So just each of those lines lands so well. So much better than, as we said before, Masaka is coming, or whatever
Masaka
it was.
Masaka is waking.
Sorry.
Masaka is waking. No one knows what the hell that
means. Be careful, Jared. You took it to the masses.
Yeah, I am.
I'm so happy with that title.
Yeah, it's yours.
No shame.
Yeah, it's all yours, Kayla.
I'm going to make a masks drinking game, I think.
Do it.
You should do some sort of cosplay with that.
Oh, and that would be so easy. Okay, yeah, I'm doing it. That's what I'm doing for Vegas this year. I only have a couple weeks. All I have to do is make a mask because I already have a TNG yellow top. So I can be... I just need to get... Oh, I think Andy has a red one. Yes, he can be Picard.
Perfect.
All right, fantastic.
This is happening, you guys. I'm going to Michael's like as soon as we stop recording.
Making me feel even worse that I can't make it to Vegas this year.
Oh, we're going to miss you so much.
Yeah, we're going to miss you big time, dude.
I feel bad about that.
Well, there's always next year.
Yes.
Anyways, because I'm pretty sure there will be another Star Trek.
This will just be a warm-up, and then next year we can go as a group cosplay from masks.
There we go. Yeah, I could be old Data with a blanket around himself.
Yep.
Speaking like Marlon Brando. He's like speaking like this.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Isn't that what he's doing? Or something like that. It kind of sounded like Vito Corleone a little bit.
With the mothballs in his mouth. Yeah. So those are our top 10. We've got the five that we kind of had seen before that we thought everyone agree on: All Good Things, Chain of Command, Inner Light, Yesterday's Enterprise, Best of Both Worlds. And then we've added Tapestry, Measure of Man, Cause of Effect, Family, and Darmok. And then, you know, because we came up with our own lists, obviously we didn't all agree on everything. We had a couple of honorable mentions we wanted to go into. So as we have time, I don't know, Brian, do you think we have time for the honorable mentions?
Yeah, I think we do.
Okay, Kayla, why don't you start it up?
Okay, I have to, if I get to choose one honorable mention from my list, I think it would be Captain's Holiday, which are the episodes with Vosh. I really love the character of Vosh, and I loved basically that whole relationship between Picard and Vosh, and it was like an adventure for him to go on. And I love Picard-centric episodes, so this is just one that stuck out in my mind as being really memorable. It's one that I really enjoy watching. And as you guys all know, that's a big criteria for me. It's not, I place heavy weight on other things like how good the episode actually is, but very heavily weighted for me personally is how much I enjoy watching the episode or movie, which is why I like Masks and Star Trek Generations. I think Captain's Holiday really is a decent episode in addition to, I just really like watching it. So for me, that's my honorable mention.
I want to say, if we were to do a list of most influential episodes, that is to say episodes that introduce a concept or an idea or a character or something that then gets called back to a lot in later episodes or movies, Captain's Holiday's got to be at the top of the list because this is the episode that gave us Ryza.
This is the first time we hear about what Ryza is. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. I love the line... when he's got the Horgon that he's going to give for Riker, and he's like, oh, you've had that for a friend of yours. Sure. Someone you love. I wouldn't go that far.
Yeah. I just love that Riker tricks him into getting the Horgon.
Yeah.
If you display it, it means you're looking for love. Uh-huh. So, of course, he buys it and puts it by his things and keeps getting...
propositions.
He's acquisition. Yeah. So, I think that's a pretty good gag. Episode.
Also, in terms of influence, this was the episode that brought Max Grodinchik into the Star Trek franchise, and this is the episode that got him the role of Rom on Deep Space Nine, so even more influential that way.
I did not know that. That's cool.
Yeah, and I can't remember, because Vosh appears in the first season of Deep Space Nine. I don't know if she has any scenes with Rom in that episode. I don't think she does, but that would have been a clever little callback. Maybe they specifically wanted to avoid that. Anyway, Captain's Holiday.
How about you guys? That's honorable mentions.
There's a couple of them, but I'll just pick one for now. Sarek. I like Sarek a lot.
Yeah, that almost made my list.
Yeah, I mean, it covers a lot of ground. Obviously, Sarek is the beloved character from the original series. I think he was the first one.
Second.
After DeForest Kelly and the pilot. he was the first one after that that they actually bought in from the original series.
And I think of all the episodes that bring back a TOS character, I think this is the best executed one.
I agree. Sarek is suffering from the Vulcan equivalent of Alzheimer's, which obviously makes him unable to contain his emotions, and he's like very erratically sending out telepathic
transmissions.
Yeah, telepathic transmissions that are causing all sorts of problems aboard the Enterprise. He's basically on his last diplomatic mission. And in order for him to survive this mission, he needs someone to help him keep his emotions under control. And he has an aide with him during the mission to help him do that. But ultimately, the aide really isn't up to the task, and Picard sort of has to help him.
I like the actor who plays the aide. I don't remember it off the top of my head. But there's this great scene where he and Sarek have like a little disagreement. And it's a great example of showing two Vulcans argue. Because, of course, it doesn't become emotional while it still kind of is. And it's just very well executed with both of them that they understand how this alien race is supposed to work. And I wish that everyone who'd written a line in Enterprise for Vulcans had watched this episode first and said, okay, we're going to do it that way. Anyway,
Picard ends up being basically an emotional anchor of sorts for Sarek during these negotiations. So while Sarek is able to conduct the negotiations and be his usual regal Vulcan self, Picard is dealing with all of the negative, uncontrollable range of emotions, from anger to sadness to anything under the sun, and it is a tour de force performance by Patrick Stewart.
It's insane.
His facial expressions change on a dime. Like everything about it is like one of the most ridiculous performances I've ever seen an actor ever do.
It's stunning. So good.
Yeah. It's one of, you watch that and you say, this is a guy who has never received an Emmy or an Oscar. It's just ridiculous.
I think it's important too, because it really shows you, it's the first time we can really visualize how Vulcans do have emotions, and they're just way stronger than human emotions.
Yeah. Which is why they have to suppress them.
Right. So it's a good bit of that Vulcan lore as well, just a little window into understanding them.
Right. And the episode has an echo later when Sarek becomes ill and Picard, they have that bond near the end when Sarek is about to die. Yeah, in unification. And then Picard has the sad news to tell Spock that Sarek had passed, and they share that mind meld that Spock gets very emotional about. So this episode has ramifications that go beyond this one episode.
Yeah.
And I've always liked Mark Leonard.
Yep.
As an actor, I thought he had tremendous presence on screen. I was always surprised he didn't have a bigger career than he actually had.
Yeah, it's too bad.
When he's on screen, you look directly at him. You're not looking at anybody else. He has tremendous camera presence.
I also think this episode is probably why they're including Sarek in Discovery, right? Because we're able to amplify the significance of the character beyond just one episode of the original series. Because Sarek appears in the original series, the animated series, then he's in a couple episodes of TNG here. He's in three or four of the movies. Then he's in the first episode of New Trek. And this is such a great connective tissue among all of that.
Mm-hmm. He was a beloved character. Everybody loves Sarek.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's...
Oh, there's also a great bar fight in this episode.
That's true.
Yeah.
There weren't too many things like that on board the Enterprise D. Yeah, that's true.
Chief O'Brien picks a fight with some guy for no good reason. So it's like the first bar fight in Star Trek history since Trouble with Tribbles, and they make the Irish guy start the fight. This is our message of not stereotyping people, and yet yet they're okay to stereotype the Irish. Anyway, good mention. I thought you were going to mention The Offspring as your honorable mention,
I was torn between the two.
Yeah.
The Offspring is a wonderful, very emotional episode.
Yeah, I actually think I like The Offspring more than Measure of a Man in my own personal list. But
is The Offspring the one with Lol?
It is.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, it definitely would not go on my top 10 list.
Oh, it wouldn't?
Yeah, I know.
Interesting. We need to do another overrated. We need to do like an overrated episode thing, so you can like voice your opinion on stuff like that. You can tread on sacred ground.
All right.
Yeah, I just think that the final 5 minutes when she's, you know, malfunctioning and she's not going to make it and she's saying goodbye to him and Data can't really process what's happening and it's very sad.
Yeah, I love the line where the evil admiral who has repented. He says his hands were moving so fast I couldn't see them.
Yeah, I do remember that line from it.
Okay, so I'm kind of torn on what to do for an honorable mention. I think I had the most unique episodes on my list, so at least consensus with everyone else who voted on this. The one I'm going to zero in on, and this doesn't get talked about very much, but I think is super significant, is a 4-season episode called The Wounded, which, you know, I mentioned Chief O'Brien. So this is basically his first real episode where he's the star. And the idea is his captain from the Cardassian Wars comes back and he's gone rogue. And he's wiping out these different Cardassian ships. And everybody is worried that this could trigger another war. And so O'Brien needs to talk him off the cliff, so to speak. This is the first episode, again to really feature O'Brien heavily. This is the first episode to introduce the Cardassians. This is an episode that shows like conflict among Starfleet officers without one of them necessarily being a traitor or something. Because Captain Maxwell, I mean, is attacking the Cardassians. He's not wrong. The Cardassians are rearming, right? His intelligence is right. Just his actions are unsanctioned by the government. This is the episode that inspired Deep Space Nine, talking about episodes with more of a legacy, like I mentioned with Captain's Holiday. It also has this beautiful scene at the end where they sing this little Irish war song called The Minstrel Bard, which is what the name of the episode should have been instead of The Wounded. And I think this episode just lands perfectly. I don't know if it would be on most people's top 10 list, but it certainly would be on mine. And also, the guy that they cast is Captain Maxwell. You see him in a couple of other things. He was most recently in one of the bad guys in the first season of Daredevil, but I think he's most famous for being the evil warden from The Shawshank Redemption. So terrific actor, terrific catch. Sort of the anti-Captain Jellicoe, if we're talking about other captains from Starfleet. Anyway, so that's my 2 cents on that.
Nice. All right, nice pick. Cool.
Thank you. All right, well, we have probably gone long at this point. We want to thank everybody for sticking with us. If you have ideas for future episodes, feel free to share them with us. And, of course, if there are episodes you think we missed that should belong on Top 10, feel free to tweet them at us or to post them in our comment section. We try to do as best we can with stuff like this, but we also recognize that a huge part about making lists on the internet is arguing about lists on the internet. So feedback is welcome.
And we'll see you all at San Diego Comic-Con and in a couple of weeks, Star Trek Las Vegas.
We're officially deep in convention season.
Very deep.
Yep.
All right. Well, thanks again, everybody. This is episode 39 in the can, and we'll see you for episode 40. They said we'd never make it that far, but we will.
All right. Bye, guys.
Wow. Bye, everybody.